Welcome to the deep dive.
Today we're doing something a little different. We're diving into the, well, it's a podcast intro,
Okay.
and it's using the Garden of Eden as
Yeah.
like a foundation for spiritual kind of like exploration, I
I
guess.
see. Yeah, so like what kind of insights are they hoping to get from that?
Yeah, so that's what we're gonna unpack all that. It's called Wisdom in the Garden, this little intro.
Wisdom in the garden. Okay, catchy.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting. So, like right off the bat, they're talking about the Garden of Eden, right? But they're not treating it like, just a biblical story. They're saying it's like a source of profound insights, and prophetic themes. Like it's this deep well of wisdom. What are your initial thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it makes sense, right? These old stories, they often have way more going on than just the surface level.
Right.
Like, we can look at the Garden of Eden, and sure, on one level, it's a garden, but it's also like, a metaphor for like the human condition, that struggle,
So it's more symbolic, you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay, that's interesting. Because they also say that like by exploring it, we can experience, get this, revelation, personal growth. That's a pretty big claim. Can we really get all that from unpacking this one story?
Well, I think it's possible. I mean, think about it. The Garden of Eden's like overflowing with symbolism.
Right.
You've got, for example, that whole duality of human nature, right?
Yeah.
The good and the bad. You got the tree of life and the tree of knowledge. When we like break down those symbols, those themes, it helps us go deeper into like understanding ourselves.
It's like, facing those temptations, those choices we all make.
Yeah. And the consequences.
Right, exactly. It's like a mirror in a way,
Yeah.
reflecting those struggles back at us. And you know what else really stood out to me? This whole idea of ancient wisdom that's baked into this story. And it made me think about like how many different cultures find that wisdom in nature. Gardens, that kind of
Oh,
thing.
yeah, for sure. Like Zen gardens, for example.
Exactly. Like that's a perfect example. In Buddhism, right? They're designed for meditation, for finding that inner peace. So this whole idea of looking to nature for, I don't know, answers or guidance, it's not exactly a new thing. But how do you think that ancient wisdom, which was usually rooted in, well, a very different world, how does it apply to us now?
You know, it's funny because even though, yeah, our world is all like technology and fast-paced and everything, people are still like dealing with the same basic stuff, right?
Right.
We're all trying to connect with others or searching for some kind of meaning,
Yeah.
and loss. Loss is just, it's a universal thing. We all go through it. And those ancient stories, like the Garden of Eden, they offer guidance and I don't know, maybe some comfort. It doesn't matter what century we're living in, those things are still relevant.
Yeah, it's about recognizing those universal truths, those things that connect us all across time. And I don't know if you noticed this too, but there's this one line in the intro that just like jumped out at me. Cultivating the seeds of insight and then blossoming in faith.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It really captures this whole idea of personal growth, don't you think?
Yeah, totally. And that whole image, right, of growing, transforming, that's at the very heart of the Garden of Eden story.
Yeah.
Like a gardener, right?
Yeah.
They tend to their garden, they nurture their seeds, they help them like blossom and everything. That's what we have to do with ourselves.
We have to cultivate.
Yeah, cultivate our inner world, our thoughts, our beliefs, all of it.
Yeah.
If we want to grow spiritually, at least.
It's like we're creating our own inner gardens, choosing which seeds, those seeds of insight to cultivate. So this podcast intro, it's doing more than just telling us a story. It's like it's giving us a framework, a way to approach our own personal and spiritual development.
It is. It's making us think, right? Like, what seeds of wisdom are we nurturing? And what will we allow to blossom?
Ooh, I like that. Okay, so for everyone listening, that's something to think about this week. What are you cultivating in your own garden?
It's a good question.
And on that note, this has been the Deep Dive. Thanks for listening.
See you next time. Okay, so get this right. We're diving into this source, and it's wild. It's like someone took all these verses from all over the Bible, Genesis, Proverbs, Isaiah, even Revelation, and wove them together into this crazy tapestry. It's called the Garden of Eden. And let me tell you, It's going to make you rethink a few things.
You know, what I find fascinating about this approach is how it pushes us past that sort of linear reading of these texts. We're not just going chapter by chapter here. We're jumping around, finding these hidden connections and those aha moments you mentioned. They're definitely in there.
Oh, absolutely. And it starts right off the bat with the title, The Garden of Eden. And I'm thinking, okay, is this like a new take on the Garden of Eden story or what?
Well, the text seems to be using Adan as a bit of a play on words, connecting it to the tribe of Dan, which, if you remember, is described as a serpent back in Genesis.
Oh, right. It even is Dan is a serpent, by the way, an adder by the path that bites the horse's heels so that its rider falls backward. Not exactly a ringing endorsement, is it?
No, not exactly. And that's what makes this connection so intriguing. It suggests that the serpent in the Garden of Eden story, well, maybe it represents something more internal to humanity. Perhaps even a part of ourselves, you know.
Okay, hold on. That's really interesting. So we're not just talking about a literal snake here, but something deeper, something within us that might lead us astray.
Exactly. And then just when you're wrapping your head around that, the text throws in this line, "For indeed, our God is a consuming fire." Pretty intense, right?
Yeah, no kidding. It definitely grabs your attention. But what does it even mean? What's the deal with fire in this context?
Well, fire often symbolizes a couple of things. Actually, judgment and purification. It's quoting Isaiah here, talking about the day of the Lord coming burning like a furnace,
yeah, you know,
consuming wickedness. But then it also points to this idea of God refining us, purifying us like fire does with metal.
So it's like a double-edged sword then, both awesome and kind of terrifying at the same time. Like a reminder that our choices matter, but there's also this potential for us to be made new.
Precisely. It's this duality that we see throughout this whole text. It's not about easy answers. It's about wrestling with the complexities of faith.
Yeah, starting to see that. Okay, so we've got serpents, fire, judgment, purification. And then just when you think you've got a handle on things, it throws us into the creation story, but it's all mixed up with verses about the word and wisdom. It's like hearing it for the first time, in a way.
And that's where things get really interesting. You see, it's not just retelling the creation story. It's reinterpreting it through this lens of Jesus, the word, and wisdom, which Proverbs personifies, real.
It's like it's saying they were there all along, woven into creation itself.
Exactly. And by weaving these passages together, the text really highlights the essential roles of both Jesus and wisdom in creation from the very beginning.
And there's this one line that really got me. And God created man in his image, in the image of God. He created him, male and female. He created them. And in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. It's like it's showing how God, the Father, Jesus, and wisdom, they're all interconnected.
Absolutely. And it goes even further, directly linking Eve's creation to this concept of wisdom.
Oh, you're right. It says, and the man called his wife's name Eve because she became the mother of all living. And that goes right back to Proverbs, where wisdom is called the mother of all living.
Exactly. It's drawing this direct parallel between Eve, the first woman, and wisdom itself. And that brings up some really interesting questions about her role back in the Garden of Eden, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. Okay, so we're talking about some serious reinterpretation going on here. We've got serpents as our inner struggles, fire as both judgment and purification, and now this link between ease and wisdom. Where does this wild ride take us next?
Well, get ready, because we're heading straight into the heart of the fall, but through this really unique lens, like I said, that really makes you think twice about those traditional interpretations.
Yeah, because now it's like the text is saying that Eve's choice in the garden, it wasn't just about disobeying God, right? It's like she was searching for knowledge, you know?
Absolutely. And it connects her search specifically with the pursuit of wisdom. Remember that link we were talking about? Eve as the mother of all living, and wisdom being described the same way in Proverbs.
Right, right. So it's like her desire for knowledge was actually what a yearning for wisdom, even if it, you know, didn't work out so well.
Exactly. The text even emphasizes that desire. It says, and the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise. It really underlines that Eve wasn't just being rebellious. She was trying to gain a deeper understanding.
It makes you think about how much humans crave knowledge, right?
Yeah.
We all want to understand things, figure out how it all works. But this story, it's like a cautionary tale showing us how that pursuit can backfire, especially when it leads us away from God.
It really is. And what's interesting is this text, it doesn't shy away from the tough questions, you know, it doesn't give us these simplistic answers. Instead, it gives us this really complex view of the fall, this idea that even in disobedience, there's this element of seeking something greater. It makes you really stop and think about choice, the appeal of knowledge, and how we reach true wisdom. It's not always a straight line.
So what about Adam in all of this? I mean, he's a big part of the story, but the text says, "And Adam was not deceived, but the woman, having been deceived, fell into transgression." So does that mean Adam knew exactly what he was doing?
It does seem to suggest that he made a conscious choice, knowing full well what could happen.
Wow. So it wasn't just Eve who messed up. Adam made his own choice. And it sounds like it was deliberate.
And if you look closely, the text offers a possible explanation for his choice, and it's a powerful one. Love for Eve. Maybe he couldn't bear the thought of a life without her, even if it meant leaving the garden.
Oh, man, that's tough. But you know what? It's relatable, too. We make choices based on love all the time, even if deep down we know they're not the best choices. It adds another layer to the fall, doesn't it? It makes it tragic, but also more human, more real.
It does. And that exploration of human nature, our choices, and what happens afterward, that's a major thread throughout this whole text. And speaking of what happens afterward, this is where things take another turn. The text introduces this really thought-provoking idea, weakness as a path to strength.
Now, it's interesting because usually think of the fall as being caused by weakness, right? Like they messed up because they were weak.
Yeah, that's the traditional take.
Yeah.
But this text flips that on its head. It pulls in verses from Corinthians where Paul says, "My power is perfected in weakness." It's like, it's saying that through our weaknesses, our failures, that's how we come to rely on God and find true strength, the kind of strength that comes from recognizing our limits and leaning on something bigger than ourselves.
So it's not about never failing, never messing up, but recognizing we need God and letting Him work through our weaknesses.
Exactly. And this ties right back to the idea of repentance, which is emphasized so much in this text. It's not enough just to admit we're weak. We have to turn back to God, seek forgiveness, and ask for guidance.
So even in the middle of all this, the fall, the consequences, admitting our own flaws, there's still this thread of hope running through it.
Absolutely. The text includes verses about the promise of a renewed heavens and a renewed earth. It's this idea of starting fresh, a chance to make things right. No matter how far we stray, God's love and mercy are always there. We just have to choose repentance, choose a new direction.
I like that. It's encouraging. But we're not quite done yet, are we? This tapestry of biblical verses, it still has more to show us. Where does this deep dive take us next? You know, it's really something else. It's like we're connecting these dots between all these different parts of the Bible, parts that didn't seem connected before. We talked about serpents, fire, creation, the fall. And now, out of nowhere, it's like the text takes this sharp turn and we end up in Revelation with that church in Laodicea, the one that's called lukewarm.
Oh, yeah. That's a powerful passage. Remember what it says. "I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I would that you were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I am going to vomit you out of my mouth." That's about as direct as it gets, wouldn't you say?
No kidding. But how does this even fit with everything else we've been talking about? I mean, we've gone from Adam and Eve to creation and repentance. And now we're in the New Testament with this church getting like a cosmic reality check.
It all ties together, believe it or not. Remember how the text earlier kept bringing up that idea of first love? Like, it talks about the church in Ephesus abandoning their first love, even though they were outwardly doing all the right things.
Oh, right. It's all coming back now. It wasn't just about going through the motions. It was about that initial spark, that passion that had gotten lost along the way.
Exactly. And that's where this Laodicea passage comes in. It's like both these churches are being called out for losing sight of the heart of it all, that deep, unshakable love for God that should be behind everything we do.
So it's not enough to just follow the rules or do good deeds. It's about what's going on inside us.
Exactly. The text seems to be saying that being lukewarm spiritually, that complacency, that loss of passion for God, that's what leads to spiritual blindness.
And those Laodiceans were definitely blind to their own situation. The text even says they do not know that you are wretched and pitiable and poor and blind and naked. Man, that's got a sting. They were totally clueless.
And that's why it's such a powerful message, even for us today. It makes us stop and ask ourselves, am I really all in with God? Or have I become complacent? Have I lost that first love?
You know, when I think about it, that's probably the biggest thing I'm taking away from all of this. This whole journey through the Garden of Eden, It's not just about ancient texts, you know, it's about how we live our lives today. It's about taking a hard look at ourselves, asking those tough questions, and making sure our faith is real, not just going through the motions.
Couldn't have said it better myself. This text pushes us to confront our own blind spots and work towards that deeper, more genuine relationship with God.
And never forget that finding God, really finding Him, means being honest with ourselves, admitting our weaknesses, and keeping that fire for God burning bright.
Well said. And as we finish up this deep dive into the Garden of Eden, let's all keep exploring, keep asking questions, and never let that fire for God die out. Because it's in those moments of searching, questioning, even wrestling with our faith, that's when we often stumble across those amazing truths.
Ever feel like, you know, you're just bombarded by like endless information?
Yeah.
Every day?
Oh, yeah.
And you're trying to sift through it all
mm-hmm.
and find like those real nuggets
yeah.
of like lasting wisdom.
Right.
It can be...
It's a challenge.
It's a real challenge.
Yeah.
What if I told you there's this really kind of surprising map
okay.
kind of hidden within this really ancient story?
Right.
The Garden of Eden.
That's what's so fascinating about this deep dive we're going to do.
Okay.
We're exploring this unique perspective, I think, on wisdom.
Okay.
Using the Garden of Eden, not just as like, you know, a biblical tale,
right.
but as this really powerful metaphor, I think,
okay.
for our own journeys
mm-hmm.
of understanding.
Yeah. And I love that you call it a journey because it's not like you just arrive at wisdom.
Right. One day. Right.
Something you're constantly working on. So we're diving into a, it's actually a podcast outro.
Okay.
From a podcast called Fittingly Wisdom in the Garden. And you know how like outros often leave you with something to ponder?
Yeah.
Well, this one hits you with this idea.
Okay.
That the Garden of Eden isn't just a story.
Okay.
It's like it's a call to action.
And that's where I think this metaphorical garden really starts to, I think, to bloom.
Yeah.
You know, because gardens require
okay.
careful tending.
Yeah.
Weeding out, you know, the bad ideas.
Right.
Planting seeds of, you know, real knowledge mm-hmm. and nurturing that understanding.
Yeah.
It's an active process. It's not passive at all.
So if we think about our own lives as these gardens,
okay.
what kinds of seeds should we be planting?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I mean, is it just reading books?
Well.
Or is it more than that?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a start, right? Reading can expose us to so many different ideas and perspectives.
Yeah.
But it's definitely more than that. I think it's about seeking out diverse perspectives. You
yeah.
know, not just reading things that we agree with.
Right.
But actively looking for viewpoints that challenge our assumptions.
Yeah. Get out of that echo chamber.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And I think it's also about embracing those aha moments.
Yeah, those moments of insight. And sometimes they come when you least expect them.
Absolutely. Sometimes those are the best kind.
Yeah. This makes me think about a line from the outro that really struck me. Relationship with the divine and with one another.
Yeah.
So if the garden represents this state of harmony.
Okay.
Could deepening our wisdom
yeah.
actually lead to more harmonious relationships?
It's a really fascinating question, isn't it? I mean, when we cultivate wisdom,
yeah.
we often, you know, start to develop, I think, greater empathy for others,
mm.
more understanding, more compassion.
Yeah.
And these are all, you know, qualities that are really essential for healthy relationships, right?
Yeah.
And I think it allows us to start seeing mm. the interconnectedness of everything.
Right.
Which in turn fosters that sense of harmony, not just with others,
right.
but yeah. as the outro suggests, maybe something even larger than ourselves.
It's like wisdom gives us the tools, not just to pend our own gardens,
mm-hmm.
but also to nurture the connections we have
yes.
with the people around us and even the world around us.
Precisely. And that brings us, I think, to the outro's final
yeah.
and I think really powerful image, which is keep nurturing your garden of faith and wisdom.
Yeah, I love that.
It's an active thing. It's a call to action. Keep nurturing.
Which makes me wonder, is there like an inherent link
mm-hmm.
between faith and wisdom? I mean, are they two sides of the same coin?
Right.
Or are they separate paths that just kind of ultimately lead to
right.
similar destinations?
That's an interesting thought. It's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have the answer to that.
Yeah.
But it's something I think worth pondering for sure, because they do seem very intertwined in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps faith in its own way is a seed of wisdom.
Okay.
Providing us with like a framework or a foundation for understanding, you know, our place in the grand scheme of things.
So we've spent all this time exploring this idea of the Garden of Eden.
Right.
As this really amazing metaphor for cultivating wisdom.
Right.
But what if we took it a step further?
Literally, like literally went outside
Yeah.
and
What if we took it literally?
interesting.
What if
And
we stepped outside our doors
yeah.
and we spent time in nature,
Okay.
observing its cycles, the cycles of growth and decay,
Right.
the resilience that we see all around us in nature, the adaptability? Could that actually provide insights for our own journeys of understanding?
Yeah, I think so.
Could time spent in a real garden
Right.
actually nurture our metaphorical
Yes.
wisdom gardens?
That's a beautiful thought.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes you think maybe the wisdom that we seek isn't just found in books and theories and, lectures, but also maybe it's woven into the very fabric
Yeah.
of the natural world.
Yeah. It's all around us.
It is.
It's just waiting for us to tap into it.
Ex
Well, that's something I think we can all consider as we,
Absolutely.
as we step out into
Yeah.
our own gardens,
Right.
whether they're metaphorical or otherwise.
That's a great thought to leave people with.
Well, until next time, everyone,
Yes.
keep cultivating those curious
We'll
minds,
keep learning.
and we'll see you on the next deep dive.
Sounds great.